Sport.
This is AFL Sunday with Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling.
AFL Sunday.
On radio.
ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And take us with you.
On ABC Listen.
Look for the AFL button.
Five games completed on this Easter long weekend. Three to go. Hello, welcome to AFL Sunday on ABC Sport. The Swans tune up in the West with a 128-point thrashing of the Eagles as they crash back to reality. The Eagles' fifth heaviest defeat in history.
Found Blakey, marked at centre-half forward, gets a kick towards Cunningham in the right forward pocket, and the late inclusion kicks a goal for the Swans. It's getting embarrassing now, and we're not even at half-time. 24 minutes gone in the second. Sydney have kicked 11. 11! Sydney have been utterly superb. But the nightmares return for the West Coast Eagles, their biggest loss at Perth Stadium. The Swans by 128 points.
Port Adelaide powered past Richmond with a 42-point victory at the MCG to give Josh Carr his second win as Port Adelaide coach. A frustrating free kick off the ball to start the third quarter against Samson Ryan. The Tigers no wins and four losses to start the season for the first time since 2010.
So the free kick from the wing will give Corey Durden back the ball at the top of the goal square after the behind. This is a lay-down misere for Durden. And that is an error that Richmond just could not afford to make in this game. An absolute gift for the Power to start this term. The lead out to 23 points.
Francis will come from a fairly long run-up as well. His kick at goal from about 35 metres out, 45-degree angle. Put through his second for the Power. The kick is good as the siren sounds and Port Adelaide win. The sixth consecutive win against the Tigers, while the Tigers slumped to 0-4 to start the season.
Hopefully you're enjoying some hot cross buns and some chocolates on this long weekend. Matt Clinch with you for ABC Sport. The winners so far this weekend, Fremantle by 2 points over Adelaide, North Melbourne by 10 points over the Blues, and the Brisbane Lions 54-point winners over Collingwood back on Thursday night. After us, the Footy Forum, so a chance for you to get involved on the talkback line. Melbourne and the Gold Coast Suns from the MCG. And tonight, the roof will be open for the Western Bulldogs and the Bombers from Docklands ahead of the traditional Easter Monday clash between Hawthorn and Geelong. Triple Premiership player, Premiership captain, he is a legend of Geelong. He's sitting in the front row alongside me, Cameron Ling. Welcome to AFL Sunday.
Great to be with you, Clinchy. Good afternoon to everyone out there. Hope you're all having a brilliant Easter, enjoying this superb day. We like to start with a highlight, but I'm going to start with a real low light, Clinchy. No. Just go bang off the top. You mentioned Easter eggs and hot cross buns, and hopefully everyone out there is enjoying them. We're not enjoying them here in the ABC Sport box because you didn't bring any in. Kelly Underwood on Friday at the Good Friday game brought in the Easter eggs for everyone, handing them round, had a bag sitting there just if we felt a little peckish.
Wow.
You brought nothing.
I did.
What is going on?
That's a fair call. To be honest, I've consumed more than I need to across the weekend already. I have a rule in my house that the hot cross buns can't come out until Good Friday. Otherwise, it's a week of consumption and the chockies can't come out until Saturday. So, good news is, Ling, I've got enough time between our show and the game starting. I'll just wander over to the convenience store and bring back a few. But it's been a somewhat slow, disjointed start to the weekend. We're at the MCG where the sun is out and it's a beautiful day. Hopefully we see some good footy like we had a bit of a taste of on Friday.
Yeah, I think we will today. I think there'll be, and I will touch on a little bit later on in our show, Clinchy, the game that we've got in front of us, the Gold Coast Suns and the Demons. I think we'll see some excitement and some really fast play. But when you're searching for a highlight on a day, it's fair to say yesterday, as far as the quality of the football went, was maybe a little on the mediocre side of things. You just search for one man, and you know who it's going to be with me, Clinchy.
Yes.
Once a year, I talk about the fact that he's one of my absolute favourites in the competition. When it's a little flat, a little mediocre, just enter Isaac Heaney.
It's towards centre wing. Big fly Heaney! Oh, my goodness! He's already a Mark of the Year winner, and that will be in contention. That's an enormous fly. Kick inside 50. Patley takes the mark. He's got players streaming forward. Deepest one is Cunningham. Instead it goes to Heaney, knocks it to his advantage, and then just sockers through the most casual of goals. Into the pocket goes Lloyd, and Heaney able to take, in the end, an uncontested mark in front of Tom McCarthy. It's been a cut above Isaac Heaney. The left foot snap is good.
Superstar.
Superstar is the right word. Isaac Heaney has a third.
Sheldrick pops it into the left forward pocket. Heaney marks for Sydney. 25 out from goal. Snaps around the body. The set snap is perfect.
He's been doing it for years. I can't speak highly enough of Isaac and what he does for our football club. His work as an on-baller, his ability to push forward, he stands up in big moments. And, you know, a lot of people certainly probably see goals and specky marks, but, you know, he's selfless, team-orientated, and he's our vice-captain for a reason.
Swans coach Dean Cox just summing him up beautifully there. Throw in the fact he's just simply a joy to watch. He, yesterday, 26 disposals, Clinchy, 4 goals, a great hanger, and he only spent 75% of time on the ground. So they were clearly, once they had the game done and dusted, they just brought him back a little bit, given they want to look after his soft tissue, look after his body, not push him too hard when they don't have to. I mean, he could have gone on and had 35 and probably kicked 6 if they'd really want to push it. Didn't need to. Well done, Isaac Heaney. A true joy to watch.
He is the player who can do it all, isn't he? And he's almost unmatched when he's in that sort of mood. And missed the game against Hawthorne with a hamstring injury. I like the fact that Dean Cox got it right. Last 8 to 10 minutes, sit on the bench, mate.
Yeah,
we've got this covered. 100-plus points. We don't need any more from you. Let's get ready for Gather Round. So, yep, your thoughts on the SMS, 0437 774 774 is your highlights from the weekend's footy.
I like all the showtime and the joy of Isaac Heaney. Tell me that you're a little bit more blue-collar.
Yes. Well, I've gone somewhat out of character, really, because this is not really my forte normally, but the defensive acts that define the games on Friday certainly have to be admired and encouraged. So, firstly, it was the efforts of George Wardlaw, who was able to deny Frankie Evans, who was having a shot on goal, and then he backed that up once more. And then the Fremantle captain, Alex Pearce, who was competing in the marking contest against Riley Thilthorpe, then a great lunging effort to deny the Adelaide Crows a last gasp effort. So my tip of the cap is to a couple of these defensive efforts.
McGovern back with the flight. Condon spoils. Elijah Holland's clean. Handball away to Evans. Great smother. Fury's body out at the North Melbourne player in Wardlaw. Pettinat palms it down to Cripps. What a tackle. Wardlaw got him.
Johnson leaves it for Sarong. They fall into the footy. Ripped out by Keys. Pete Lee kicks smother 40 from home. It centralises and the Dockers have numbers. That was a desperate defensive effort that has saved the game for Fremantle. An Eastern miracle for Fremantle as Alex Pearce saves the Dockers at the death.
So Aaron Bryanson, Corby Middlemass with the calls on Friday and Friday night. But 0437 774 774, your highlights from the weekend's footy, and could be still to come, of course, with the 3 games to take place, the Easter Monday clash here at the MCG, Hawthorn and Geelong. But I'm sick of the standards conversations around Carlton and Essendon and how it's been a challenging couple of weeks in terms of leadership. I'm sure inside change rooms and inside the club during the week, they'll just be replaying those moments, Lingy, from George Wardlaw, who is a team spirit lifter, and Alex Pearce, who is just the captain who does every little small thing you'd expect, competes in the air, competes at ground level, and then some great desperate acts, and that's what you can build your culture off.
Absolutely you can. And they're the little things, Clinchy, that you need to reward as a coach, as a leadership group within the four walls of the inner sanctum of a footy team and a footy department is, hey, these are the acts that we're going to show in the meetings. These are the acts that clubs have all got different types of awards and little weekly recognition awards that they have. I wouldn't guess what they are across, but for us,
there's a meat tray at the Gold Coast Suns, isn't there, where they pick it out and give it to someone, or someone has to buy one and present it to the playing group.
And we had a what we called the Spirit Award, and it was the player for that week who encapsulated our spirit. And we had a definition around that. I won't bore our listeners with what our definition was and what it looked like, but they're the little acts. So that Alex Pearce effort probably would have scored us that player the Spirit Award for the week. And it sat on your locker proudly, a really visual thing to say, hey, I delivered for my teammates what we needed in that moment. And it was a really proud thing. So they're the things that you build it on. And from a real foundation of all of those things, then the great kicks and the great marks and those hyper-talented players come in and they'll kick you 3 or 4 goals. And you need all that and you love all that, but it's still built on a foundation of those selfless acts that you highlighted there.
So, I mean, you can't control the external narrative, but you can control the internal and celebrate Absolutely. Those moments where individuals are able to do the best team things. Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling with you for AFL Sunday on ABC Sport. I guess the other collective, Ling, is the Good Friday appeal and how footy has started to play its role in that. So $25 million raised as part of the Royal Children Melbourne Hospital with the fundraising that took place. And I love the young kids, the two teams running through the banner. Yes, it was a great occasion for North Melbourne, not so much for Carlton, but I feel like we're starting to get the balance right in terms of the young kid ringing the bell to celebrate the occasion for those kids who have gone through a pretty tough time.
Yeah, it is nice. And I was one, if you rewind back to when there were calls for footy to be played on Good Friday, I was like, well, let's not. It's about something bigger. It's about the Good Friday appeal, about being with family, about all these things. And when they started playing footy, I was like, oh, come on. But I love the fact that both clubs that are involved in North Melbourne's obviously been a huge driving force. The AFL make it about the Royal Children's Hospital more so than the game. Then we get a game for a bit of entertainment and for a bit of joy in the day as well. But it's still about more than the game of football. And you're right, when both those teams are lined up and it's the patients and their families who are the ones who are actually running through the banner and the players have created the guard of honour, Try and stay just stoic through that and not have a little tear well up in the eye. It's a beautiful moment for them. Some of the kids are hilarious. They race through the banner and they run out and then they're not sure what to do.
Yes.
Other kids just quickly, they go and high five every one of the players. Yeah. And the kids who've ran through the banner really quickly realise, oh, hang on, I want to do that as well. And they run back to their favourite player. It's a beautiful moment.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the great occasions. AFL Sunday on ABC Sport, Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling with you. Ling, your messages have come through straight away. 0437 774 774. Brett's in Castle, Maine. Brett in Canberra as well. Love the show. Where to for Carlton? I don't see Voss seeing out next month. What are your thoughts? That's coming through from Brett in Castlemaine. So the big story over the last 48 hours has been the Carlton Football Club. The Blues' new footy boss, Chris Davies, declared in a radio interview yesterday that Michael Voss would absolutely be safe ahead of the Carlton clash against Adelaide, which starts off Gather Round on Thursday night. This is after a 10-point loss to North Melbourne on Good Friday, despite leading by 22 points. For Carlton fans, it's an all-too-familiar feeling of having a lead and giving it up in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And I'm not surprised Chris Davies has come out and said it's not going to happen this week. It's too short a week. It's all going to happen too suddenly. And there's nothing to be gained, I think, from making any moves now. The name just went off the screen. Our listener said the next month's going to be really hard. Well, you're right, it is, because it's the Adelaide Crows in Adelaide for Gather Round to kick things off. It's then the huge rival against the Pies at the MCG on a Thursday night again. So another, what feels like a short week, even though it's Thursday to Thursday. It's Fremantle in Perth after that. And then they have got St Kilda, but followed by Brisbane and the Bulldogs, arguably the two best teams in the competition. So the next 4 to 5 weeks are really, really tough for Carlton and for Michael Voss. And I am of the opinion that there's nothing really positive in to be gained by sacking him now. Now, Carlton fans are probably yelling at their radio saying, well, what, are we going to waste another 4, 5, 6 weeks? I want to see if they can, in some way, start to slowly turn things around and to give them to what we'd call the traditional bye weeks of the season and say, okay, so have we shown dramatic improvement from now until those bye weeks and we're actually on an upward swing and the painful lessons have been learnt from these opening rounds and we're back where we expected to be. Now, if we're not, and if we're a million miles from that, I understand the realities of the game and then tough calls are made. I just don't think there's any benefit doing it right now, Clinchy, or in the next week or two.
So if you're Graham Wright, the CEO of Carlton, what are the metrics using to measure that? Is it win-loss? Is it style? Is it how competitive you are in games? Is it how many games you lose by 60-plus points?
No, it's got to be... Unfortunately, the win-loss is going to come down to it. And Chris Davies, the general manager of football, spoke about it. There's certainly some positives out of the way they're playing because they're putting themselves in a situation to be 40 points up or 30 points up or 20 points up in a game. Great. But unless you can go on and then win the game, Carlton fans, I think they're done with being, oh, it was great, we were 30 points up, but we still lost. That's painful to watch.
Yeah.
Well, losing in the same way, coughing up a lead, is really hard and painful to watch. Now, there's reasons from the Good Friday game. Jacob Wiedering going down was a huge out. When you need your leaders to fix things on the field and you've had a history of not fixing things, to lose your key defender, your best defender, and your key leader down in that back line, that was really crucial. So that's a reason why it might have happened.
So that's a reason it was different to Melbourne the week before. Yeah. But are they reactive? Are they quick enough to make changes when things are going against the Blues in those final terms?
Well, no, the answer is they're not right now because they keep losing the same way. But is that all on Michael Voss making changes, or is a lot of it need to be shared by the key on-field leaders? And that is absolutely the case. So Cripps and Walsh and Mackay and Wiedering normally, unfortunately he couldn't because he was knocked out, yeah, it's on them. It's on Adam Chera. I know he's just coming back in for his first game, but he's got to be seen as a leader. George Shewitt is a leader on there. They're the ones who've got to be working with Michael Voss to solve the problems out on the field. So it is a shared responsibility. Sadly, though, when it's happening like this, it feels like 80% of the blame, 90% of the blame lands on the senior coach.
Yep.
And he's landing on Michael Voss's shoulders right now.
Here were the thoughts of the coaching legend, Mick Malthouse, with his thoughts on the Blues.
From my observation right now, the board itself is different.
Mm-hmm.
And the board, this board has to be so strong to withstand what comes from outside. There's a lot of know-it-all, big monies, throw it around, don't take any responsibility, and keep potting the club. If they can ignore those people and get them out of the system and just don't let them affect the club. And also former players that have, and there's some really good ones that are fantastic for the club. There's a lot that aren't. And you've got to be careful which ones you listen to. And from my observation right now is this board is a lot more united, a lot more giving, and a lot more understanding. Now, how far that's going to go by the end of this year, I'm not sure.
Mick Malthouse, someone who has coaching experience at the Blues, a premiership coach, giving his insights as to how he sees the board and handling these circumstances. It looks more and more challenging than Michael Voss in the final year of his contract will be there beyond this season. What odds would you give that he can turn it around?
Okay, so I get that. Come the end of the season, even Mick alluded it to, it may be too much against him by the end of the season. But go back to my initial point, there's nothing to be gained by doing it now. Let's see what he does with the rest of this season. But I can feel the yelling at the radio right now at me from Carlton fans saying, I don't want to go through another 15 weeks of what we've already been doing. So I get the frustration is at a real peak right now. The board that Mick alluded to there, you need to be able to tune out that outside noise and anger and frustration if you believe that things are in place that are going to take you in the right direction. Now, if you don't, then ultimately you make a change and you've got to make that hard call. That's one of your responsibilities of being on the board and being the CEO and all of these different things. But I would give time, more time through this season before I wouldn't be jumping in the next month, to go back to that initial question from one of our listeners.
Yeah.
It's not a decision I would make in the next 4 weeks.
But at the start of the season, when you look at Tom De Koning leaving, Charlie Curnow leaving, Jack Silvani leaving, and while you brought in some nice players in Florent, Haywood, Ainsworth, Jagger Smith in the lineup, I didn't have Carlton in the top six. I certainly didn't have Carlton in the top eight. I thought in absolute best case scenario, they could be competing from 8th to 10th to, more realistically, 8th to 14th.
Yep. No, I think that's a fair assessment. And Jagger Smith looks a beauty, an absolute ripper of a young player. So there's a couple there. I made the observation on Friday at the Good Friday game that when you look at the players on the park and the different levers that Michael Voss might be able to pull, he doesn't have a lot of options there. There's some high-end players, certainly Cripps and Wiedering, and these players fit into that category. But there's some players running around there who aren't much good.
No.
And I think the sooner they have greater depth of either young players making the leap or they keep adding through free agency or trading in the next to push some of those players out who aren't quite up to it, the better for Carlton. But I'm with you. I didn't even consider them for top eight this season.
And I think that's the challenge for Michael Voss, is to look into their VFL side and reward the players that are pushing for opportunity. On the SMS, 0437 774 774. Hi, Lingy, just your thoughts. Would the Carlton board be looking at their options now in terms of coaches available? I mean, the obvious ones that come to mind are John Longmire, Adam Simpson, who's working at the club in a consultative role, so you would think he is very unlikely, given the fact that he said, I'm not going to be working alongside Michael Voss and then take his job. And Ken Hinckley is the other who stepped out of senior coaching. Would that be the...
That's a great question, because, yes, the board of any club can chew gum and walk at the same time. So they can be doing two different things. They can be assessing, okay, so where does it look like at bye rounds this week, this year? Where does it look come the end of the season, where the likelihood is we're not going to be playing finals? If we were to make a move, who would we be looking at? So Tasmania is coming into the competition. We assume, as an industry, that Tassie are probably going to announce their coach, their first senior coach, at the end or by the end of this season. So there's maybe one of those names you've mentioned out of the equation already. Would we want to go with a Buckley, Hinckley, Longmire type coach? Or would we? Who's the best young coach out there? Can we find another Sam Mitchell type coach who's a young person who's going to jump in and be a terrific senior coach? They can look at all of those things while still giving Michael Voss time and support to show us that he's the one who can take us forward. It's okay to be doing both of those things when things aren't perfectly going to plan and your senior coach is out of contract at the end of the season. The important thing through all that, though, Clinchy, is you can't afford then a heap of that just to be constantly being leaked to the yeah. media and to different people around the footy. You have to keep that really in-house, do your due diligence, while also saying, Michael, show us that you're the one to take us forward, and then we'll forget about all that other stuff and we'll back you in totally with a new contract come the end of the year.
And the most recent example is Melbourne, who many thought Nathan Buckley might walk into that coaching job if he wanted to do it. They went through a process. Stephen King ended up being the coach in which they appointed, and the game style looks like it's perfectly situated for this team at this moment. That doesn't necessarily deliver you success, but it gives you a good starting point. AFL Sunday on ABC Sport, Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling with you on the SMS, 0437 774 774. Nola says, thanks, Ling, for shining a light on Wiedering going down. Not only is one of the best fullbacks, but he is a leader, which is what was needed in the pressure of that last quarter. And Beansy from Broadford says, Lingy being Easter, I believe you want to see if Vossie can resurrect the season. Keep your thoughts coming through on the SMS, 0437 774 774. You mentioned it wasn't a day of sort of highlights at the MCG. Well, there was this mark from Morris Rioli Jr. I'm just interested, did you have this in front of Isaac Keeney last night?
Hopper chips it to half forward. Four presents again. 65 from home. Wheels round onto his right. Rioli from the... Oh! Here we go! Morris Rioli got an almighty shit and pulls it into the top of the goal square. And that will get the Richmond faithful going. What an incredible ride that was!
So the beauty of radio, Ling, is it sounds sometimes more electrifying than what maybe it was. He got a nice little ride on LaFau to come down with a mark. He sort of shared a bit of it, but for Richmond fans, at least it was a reason to smile. I don't think it was better than Haney's.
Do you know what that call just made me think of? A game that was 48-90 total score on a beautiful day with skill errors galore. That was a one little highlight in an otherwise very, very mediocre game of football. It wasn't as good as Isaac Heaney's for mine, unfortunately. I'm sorry to the guys who called it. I loved the enthusiasm, but you were starved of highlights yesterday.
It was a dirty night last night for the West Coast Eagles. The Sydney Swans winners by 128 points. They kicked 24 goals, 19-163. It's the Eagles' fifth heaviest defeat in their club record. Tom Papley celebrated his 200th game, and he was full of praise for the Swans, who took a crack on him.
Melican sends it back inside the forward 50. McDonald gets to the front. Can't mark off hands. Papley rives, snaps, goals! And there's the celebration. He takes off running in game 200.
Yeah, it's you pinch yourself a little bit sometimes. I haven't thought about it too much, but I was having to think about it over that last quarter there, and it's you're just pretty grateful, I think. Could be Plumbing, could be in Bunyip, but Swans took a chance on me, and I just wanted to repay the faith. Like, they didn't have to pick me. I was this fat bloke from Bunyip that drank some piss and ate some pies for breakfast. And but yeah, I got to work when I got here and didn't waste an opportunity. And yeah, I just every day I love going to the club. I'm an energetic bloke and don't want to waste a day.
So in true Tom Papley fashion, he gives you the honest opinion, but the Swans kicked the first 11 goals of the game, West Coast 8 behinds, and in the end the game was over at half-time, Lingy.
What is it with blokes from Bunyip coming into footy clubs, let's say a little bit on the bigger side of things?
Yeah, well-conditioned.
My old mate Shane Mumford would have described himself exactly the same as the big lump from Bunyip. I don't know if he was eating pies. He was eating sausages in bread.
He famously
had 12 or 14 or whatever he did in one sitting, and certainly drank enough of what Tommy Papley was talking about there. But he's a ripper, isn't he, Tommy Papley? He's the one. If he was one of your teammates, you would just cherish him, love him. And if I was still playing and playing against him, he's one I just really, really want to grind into the ground a little bit. But that's what he does for his team. And he's been a wonderful player. Still is a wonderful player. And the Swans were just ruthless. They were on and sharp. And I know we were perhaps hoping for the best from the West Coast Eagles because they've won a couple of games and all there's little signs of excitement. But they were completely in a different weight class yesterday playing against the Swans. Harley Reid struggled with the job that James Jordan did. All of those young, talented West Coast players just realised they're playing against a hardened, high-quality team who've made multiple grand finals and a really good football team. So a big, big difference in class between those two.
Yeah, Charlie Curnow booted 4 goals. He's not the star of the show, which many thought he would be in Sydney, but he is playing a role in a system. You mentioned Isaac Keeney with his 4 goals. Chad Warner, 24 disposals and 13 score involvements alongside his 2 goals, and Brody Grundy with 28 disposals, 9 clearances, 33 hitouts and a goal. So they've got enough players who are contributing, and I guess the next few weeks are going to tell us about the Swans. The Suns, the Giants and the Bulldogs are the bigger challenges to come. Are they a genuine top four threat? Well, they were able to bully a side that's probably going to be bottom four.
Yeah, but they are a top four threat, no doubt, Clinchy. Just the way they play. I think what we could say is last year was a tough year for the Swans because they were late in their getting their season started, as in their pre-season. They had injuries, they had late operations. That's what happened when you keep making grand finals. And unfortunately for them, couldn't quite get over the line in those grand finals. But I think last year was them feeling the wear and tear of big, long final seasons the previous few years. That doesn't mean they can't play. When they're healthy and Warner and Heaney and Papley and Blakey and all of these players are flying across the ground, they're as good as anyone in the competition. So, yep, I know it's going to be a tight top four this year, but they are a top four calibre team.
Without Errol Goulden at the moment, here is Andrew McWalter, the West Coast Eagles coach.
Overriding emotion is, I think we've played 4 games. We've played 2 teams who were expected to be at the top of the ladder, 2 teams maybe further down the bottom of the ladder, and we're not anywhere near where we need and want to be. So clearly playing the best teams in the comp, we can't get any part of the game really on our own terms. So Swans, to me, to my eye, and every bit of data today, they were as good a team as I've seen this year. Sydney are a really mature team, as you guys know. You'd be aware of all the data around their age profile and their demographic of their side that played today. They taught us a lesson. And that's our guys get to see that and get to see the gap.
No Elliot Yeo for the West Coast Eagles. What advice would you give to Harley Reid?
Just try and stay patient. You're not going to be the world's greatest player straight away. Learn to work through a tag. You're a competitive guy. I get that, and you want more. But it's okay. The game will come to you a little bit more. Yesterday was a horror day for your team. Just continue to learn your game with an element of patience. And I think with that patience, then maybe some of those less disciplined acts will get out of your game. I still think Harley Reid's going to be an outstanding player. He almost expects too much of himself, as the footy world does, expects too much of him too soon.
I think some of his senior players need to support him. Tim Kelly, Liam Baker, Jack Graham. I think those guys can assist him, as we heard from Mason Wood when Nasir Wanganeen Miller has been tagged to try and get him a few easy possessions. AFL Sunday on ABC Sport. In a few moments' time, we'll take you through the events at the MCG. And as always, you can get in touch with us on the SMS.
You're listening to AFL Sunday with Matt Clinch and Cameron Lee.
AFL Sunday.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And take us with you.
On ABC Listen.
Look for the AFL button.
There's always room for improvement, and there's always a lot of positives to take away from a win. We'll review both sides of that. And playing four quarters of football, we won four quarters. It wasn't pretty at times, and I thought there was moments where we played some good footy and probably just didn't finish off our work. And I think if you looked at the two halves, first half around stoppage we were poor, but our transition game and scoring off turnover was quite positive. And the second half we were better in around the stoppage and contest.
AFL Sunday on ABC Sport, Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling with you. Welcome to our South Australian audience for the first time. They were the thoughts of Josh Carr, the Port Adelaide coach, after their 42-point victory over the Tigers at the MCG. Unfortunately for Richmond fans, 6-12-48 is their lowest score in a match for 26 years. So a bit of work for Adam Uze to do with his side yet to taste victory in 2026. It wasn't pretty, Lingy, and Jason Horne-Francis featured with a couple of goals in the last quarter, but for Port Adelaide, it gives them a second win and the hope that they can try and build throughout the season.
Yes, you're being very kind, saying it wasn't pretty. It was ugly as hell. But for Port Adelaide, it's a win. Yep. And it's the win they had to have. I'd call it professional in the way they went about it. We know they're not quite at full strength. Any team that doesn't involve Connor Rosie is going to be mean you're a little bit off your very best. But I thought some of their other key players just did what they had to do. Zach Butters, just he was that in a mistake-filled game. Butters just found targets. As you said, Horne-Francis just bobs up and kicks a couple of goals. I thought Allaire down back was just so steady, and he gets away with a little push in the back every now and then, but that's clever ball use. And just
he was the player who was back to almost his best. 23 disposals, 18 intercepts. He had 8 intercept marks. 10 was the record in which he equally shares, and obviously a game that's missing. Toby Nankervis and Tom Lynch, the Port Adelaide talls, were able to have a significant impact on the game.
Yeah, they were. And as I said, just did their job. Did it to a really high level. And any time, so they score 90 points, which is fine. But you keep the opposition, regardless of where they're at in their development profile, to only 48 points on a nice day at the MCG. That's a quality game. You can only do it. You can only play who's in front of you. You can only do what you can do. And Port Adelaide did it fine. So, no, they're not. I don't think they're finals bound, Port. Sorry to the Port fans there. But I think you saw them just being a really solid team that requires some of their A-grade players to play at their best. And you're going to need Rosie and these types of players flying if you're going to knock off the genuine, say, top six or seven teams.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who finishes higher in the ladder, Port Adelaide or Richmond, given many were bullish about Port Adelaide's young players coming through.
I got Port finishing higher.
Higher?
Yeah. I think Richmond are now struggling with... They probably overperformed a little bit last season, and now they're that little bit of extra expectation, which was never high going into this season. I think they're struggling a bit when you lose a couple of the key players. As you said, the older players, experienced players, maybe just one or two are getting games or more important roles in the game a bit earlier than they should, and they're getting exposed a little bit. So I think Port are a more mature team and should finish higher than Richmond.
One of the challenges for Adam Uze yesterday was Samson Ryan gave away a free kick off the ball, a gut punch to Jordan Sweet. We've seen the AFL don't particularly like these. He was the Richmond coach as to what took place.
Some of the undisciplined acts is stuff that we can't, like, especially when we're going through what we're going through. We've obviously got a few players out and got some young players out there, so you can't defend behind undisciplined acts. So I'll cop it if it's an execution error and we're just not as good as them. But when it's something like that, that they can just crush your spirit, he just come in then and apologise for it, and it was probably a silly thing to do. Well, it was. His response post that, the next centre clearance, we win clearly, was what I really want him to focus on. He needed to payback is the mistake, and all I can ask for is that next set of bounces to jump in hard and pay it back tenfold. So he did that, but yeah, it was obviously disappointing. And like I said, some of those, whether it was bad decisions with the footy or a couple of undisciplined acts, yeah, they can obviously crush your spirit, but yeah, we move on.
Adam Uze, the Richmond coach, after his side went down to Port Adelaide by 42 points. So for the Tigers, they take on the Giants in Gather Round. That's at the Barossa on the Sunday. I think I'm heading out to do that one, Lingy. And for Port Adelaide, of course, they bookend Gather Round. They take on the Saints on Sunday night.
Yeah, and just listening to Adam Uze there, he's absolutely right. So all his players are having a crack. There's one thing you cannot question the Tigers. They even ended up beating Port Adelaide in the contested possession. So I know that's not the perfect measure of having a crack, but they're trying and they're working overtime, and you can see them trying to harass and tackle and chase and all of that. They are so far from being good enough to be able to overcome ill-disciplined or gifting the opposition just multiple easy goals. You know, a team like Brisbane can probably have a little moment where they gift a goal to the opposition. Well, they know they're probably going to get three back in a hurry because they're so damn good. Richmond aren't that. So they are on red revs the whole time in the game. And unless it went really, really perfectly, they're going to probably find it difficult. So you can't then throw in here, have a goal, have another one, yeah, whatever.
Yep.
It's too hard to overcome. But Adam Uze is clearly, I think, doing a good job of developing this group. And at 0-4, it might not feel like that right now. But you can see the efforts there. You can see the buy-in to everything that he's trying to build for probably 3 years' time, ultimately, when that young group gets to blossom.
Port Adelaide or Saints at home, the power for the last game of Gather Round?
Oh, wow. Wow. I haven't loved St Kilda at the whole time.
Just the one win against the Giants.
Yeah, but I think they are better than Port Adelaide.
Yeah, I'm sort of
They certainly there. Should be better this year.
Yep.
Got to get moving. Coin there, Clinchy.
On the SMS, 0437-774-774. Lingy, what AFL club is in the best position right now? Essendon or Carlton? Had to know that one was coming.
Yes.
Bombers haven't played yet, so we might be talking about them tomorrow for all the listeners saying, why are we focusing so much on Carlton given Essendon are in a similar position?
Who is in a better position right now? So who would win a game between those two right now is Carlton.
Yep.
Carlton would win that game. But
neither are going to win a premiership any time soon. Who is progressing quicker? Have Essendon made their decisions and starting to prioritise the draft?
So that probably has me leaning slightly Essendon's way, only because of what Tasmania does to the draft for those couple of years. If Carlton don't get where they're going with this group or some form of this group, and then they have to say, oh, hang on, we need to go to the draft, but we go to the draft in the 2 or 3 years of compromised drafts around Tasmania, they're a long way off being able to rebuild with quality. Richmond bit the bullet early and made the move and went fully to the draft. Essendon feel like they've jumped earlier out of necessity because they're so bad. It's line ball. Walsh for 7 years is a huge commitment. Cripps, you probably, his body's going to pack it in before you get any real benefit of, you know, Jagger Smith being one of the top 10 players in the comp, if that's where he gets to.
So which list manager would you want to be, Carlton or Essendon?
Essendon. Essendon.
If only you Essendon. Could see Cameron Ling's face as he's trying to make that
Oh,
call.
No, actually, no, I changed that. Sorry. No, I'm taking it back because I just realised Essendon don't even have a genuine locked-in leadership formation. Right. So Zach Merritt might leave at the end of this year or might be gone.
He'll certainly ask the question again.
So you don't have him. So you're relying on Andy McGrath being forced to step into a role that perhaps was supposed to be filled by Zach Merritt. Well, who else is leading this young group that you might have gone to the draft with out of the Bombers? At least Carlton have a what you'd call a succession plan of leadership, which is Cripps, Wietering and Walsh.
And Jagger Smith, maybe.
And Jagger Smith, maybe. But you at least have a core that you might want to get to the draft in a hurry and wrap young players around those guys, but at least you have a leadership core. Essendon, there is total confusion playing-wise as to who your leadership core is when you don't know what Zach Merritt's doing. So I backpedal on that. I would say Carlton.
And I should backpedal. Zach Merritt might not ask for a trade. He might sign a long-term deal, but at the moment that seems a little hard to see. Phil says, don't get me wrong, Henny is a great player, but they were playing a very poor side at the moment. Let's see how he goes against a better side. Afternoon, boys. Your thoughts on the Essendon coach if they suffer a huge loss tonight? Most people are saying that Scott's position, he could be in some trouble. So that's coming through on the SMS.
But again, I go back to my point around Michael Voigt. I don't think there's a benefit in doing it now. I need to see. And now, again, Essendon fans will be yelling at me saying, haven't we seen enough? Last year, I take last year out of the equation a little bit. That's the most horrific year in history, injury-wise, for the Bombers. Now, they've started sort of the same way, without the injuries. Show me what you can do from now until, let's call it round 15 or 16. And maybe if it's still as bad as it is right now, and it's going nowhere, and you haven't seen the improvement in young players, well, then you start making plans for the future. But there's no benefit in doing it in round 4 or 5, in my eyes. It is just too early on in the season.
Yeah, Leon Cameron was probably the most recent example of a coach that struggled to survive the first 3 months of the footy season. Nathan Buckley got to the almost halfway mark of the season before he and Collingwood decided to part ways. 0437 774 774 is the SMS number. As always, you can help shape the agenda. No name. Hey, Lingy, you might be coaching Carlton next week. Brendan from Hobart says, I'm still scratching my head that the Pies let Majacek go.
Yeah.
It looked criminal Thursday night. Interestingly, Braden Maynard agrees with that thought. That sort of seeped through in an interview he did that Majacek's always been a good culture player, and whether it was salary cap related as to why they decided to let him go to Melbourne for an extra year. It is always interesting when the leaders of your club sort of gets involved in list management stuff.
Yeah, and it's probably not perfect from a Collingwood perspective, but Braden Maynard was just being honest. And I think it's an honest opinion that certainly I share. I'm totally with Braden. I think most people you talk to would share that opinion. Brody Majacek was the glue of that forward line that Jamie Elliott and Bobby Hill and all these players could show off their prodigious talent. But Majacek's central focal point, his work rate, the hard work he did off the ball allowed a lot of that to function so beautifully. And then you throw in the fact that the quality of person that he is and the way that he interacts with his teammates, the leadership, the example he sets to young players, I just don't think you can afford to lose players and people of that quality from your footy club. Especially when you're quibbling over maybe a year.
Five-time leading goal kicker. And now working with Jacob Van Rooyen at Melbourne to try and help him learn his craft.
Yeah, and what's the downside? If you give him that extra year and he's maybe body-wise and a little bit past his prime and he's still around at your club, you've got a great role model, somebody who maybe, and I'm only talking worst case here, so we're talking a few years' time, maybe is your key forward in your VFL team teaching your next young star forward what it takes to be an AFL player. Well, that's nothing but positive.
Yeah. I assume they like the idea of Jack Buller coming in to play sort of that hybrid forward up the wing, but he's not at that level at the moment. And maybe they're keeping their money to see if Ben King becomes available. Is Jed Walter available? Who can they try and chase from a rival club?
Ben King's not going anywhere. If he keeps getting the delivery he's getting right now, we're about to see him today. He's kicked 16 goals from 3 games. I'm actually heading down to do a little interview with him as well.
Are you just?
Yes.
What's your first question to him? What's it like being on top of the Coleman?
Oh, how good's life? Yes. When the ball comes in 60 times a game with lightning fast, skillful players kicking the ball to you, I reckon you're enjoying yourself.
I would say so. Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling with you for AFL Sunday on ABC Sport. 0437 774 774. Last word from Brett. Lingy, your honest thoughts. Where do you think Collingwood will finish the ladder this season?
Yeah, that's a good one, Brett, because I had them top six coming into the season with my predictions. I'm getting worried about that with their inability to score and clearly a huge reliance on Nick Dacos. But that's every team relies on their A-plus player to still play great football. It's probably now, rather than being 1-6, it's probably 5-9 in that grouping. I'm not seeing them quite in the same league as certainly the Brisbane Lions, probably a little bit the Sydney Swans, the Western Bulldogs. I need to see the Suns string it together for week after week after week after week before I get too pumped up on them. But right now,
yep,
they're right there with the very best in the competition. So Collingwood are probably just a little off that bracket. Fremantle keep finding a way to win. Yeah, so it's probably shifted my bracket for Collingwood just down a group, but I still think they can play finals.
Their depth certainly doesn't match Brisbane, and that was the scary proposition, is that when Brisbane get going, they're going to be a frightening proposition if they can start to string some games with consistency in terms of players' accessibility.
Nothing matches Brisbane, though. And, and I made the joke on Friday at the Good Friday game. I said, the league should be banned from putting Brisbane on a Thursday night, because then you can't help but compare every other game of football you watch to the quality of the Brisbane Lions and their depth through the midfield and their ball use. And throw in, hey, we've just won two premierships, but let's put Kitty Coleman back at halfback and let him just run a mark. And
Link McCarthy back from his ACL.
Oscar Allen, let's bring him in, and Sam Draper. Levi and Will Ashcroft. Will Ashcroft's won two Norm Smiths and he's nowhere near his peak yet. No. And Levi has only got like upside in front of him. It's crazy how good they are, the Brisbane Lions. So let's not necessarily put anyone in their category just yet.
Boys, please give the poor old Bombers fans a break. Dawn Fraser's sister couldn't swim and Chris Scott's brother can't coach. That's right. Bang, bang. 0437 774 774. Cameron Ling's last word about to come. He can take us in any direction he wants to close out the weekend's footy. But just give me a snapshot of Adelaide and where you see the Crows at the moment after losing to the Cats down the highway and a narrow loss to Fremantle.
I rate the Crows really highly, Clinchy, really highly. And they have just been... they've lost games because of and have been smashed by injuries. So I think they could have beaten the Cats if they'd had, you know, Dawson and Walker and these types of players. Huge out is Jordan Dawson. And then yesterday's game, Friday night's game, the key backs that they lost in the off-season, their defensive players that they lost, just meant they got exposed by Tracy and these types of players early on in the game. Now, if all of those... defensive players were there, I think they beat Fremantle comfortably. But you got to play with who you've got in your team, and those defenders are still anywhere from 8 to 14 weeks away. So it's a huge chunk of the season you're going to be without them. But crazily, and call me crazy, I still rate them really highly, and I think they can figure in the pointy end finish of the season, provided those defenders come back healthy. They might not be at their absolute best just because of games played, but if they can come back healthy enough, they can do something this year, the Crows. They've got enough quality out there. Their ball use is excellent. They do a lot of things right. They're just not winning games right now, but I think it's personnel-based.
Yeah, I think you can see their issues. Mark Keane being out, Jordan Butts with a concussion. The other part is Isaac Rankin. When you miss such a significant part of the start of the season, you're just playing catch-up, and you can tell he's just not quite at the speed of the game, and they need him to be that X-factor player. But when you haven't played any practice games because of suspension, it makes it so hard to find your best when the competition has already been up and running for a few weeks.
Yeah, and you can see glimpses of his best and what it's going to be, but it might not be for another 3 or 4 weeks as well, because you're playing that catch-up you're talking about.
Yep.
But he's still, in the next month, he's going to rip a game apart again and just have us all being reminded of how good he is. I've got the Crows in that 3 to 5 sort of bracket on the ladder come the end of the season. It might not be a smooth ride, but I still have them right up there.
But while Fogarty was out on Friday night and Tex Walker is towards the back end of his career, Riley Filthorpe is threatening to emerge. You've got to give credit to the Fremantle forward line, Jai Amos with 4 goals, Pat Voss with 2-3 after the week that was for him, and Josh Tracy with 2-2. They are starting to build a nice chemistry with the small forwards complementing them, Dudley alongside Shea Bolton as well.
I like Freo too. And you know, you just know what you're getting from that middle of the ground. Sarong and Brayshaw are stars of the comp. I think if they were over here, we'd probably be pumping them up even more, talking about them more. Sometimes you can just get lost. You talk about Nick Dacos and Marcus Bontempelli, and quite rightly so, because they're special players, but you don't always throw Caleb Sarong in that same conversation, and I think Sarong should be. So, yeah, they're very good. And Shea Bolton, as we've said a couple of times on this show, he's back to his hungry, athletic, hunting best that's ending up with goals and creativity and score involvements. Good signs for the Dockers.
His ceiling could be anything, Shea Bolton. Each Sunday we'd like to close our program with Cameron Ling and his last word.
Geelong Premiership player Doug Wade to present the Premiership Cup to Cameron Ling and the Geelong Football Club.
Blackie, toughest opponent.
Cameron Ling.
Ben Cousins. Toughest opponent.
Cameron Ling.
Dane Swan. Toughest opponent.
Probably Cameron Ling.
The hardest defender you've ever played on Bucks.
Cameron Ling.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate that one. Another little pump up for me, Clinchy. Today we are at the MCG. We are sitting in the ABC Sport box looking over this beautiful ground. And I'm just giving you a word of warning. You're about to call it. Get ready for a shootout. Get ready for a shootout. Melbourne taking on the Gold Coast Suns. Melbourne want to invite a shootout. I think their two wins this year, they scored 100 points against Carlton, great comeback win, and they were going away with it last week. Their other victory against the Saints, they scored 120 points to 107. Well, the Gold Coast Suns, they're going to reply if Melbourne say, hey, let's have a bit of a shootout. Let's have some high skill, high space, high speed. They love a shootout. So their three wins so far this season, 128-60 against the Tigers, 131-72 against the Eagles, 125-69 against my Catters. They will want a shootout. They are the best at a shootout, even though they are missing Petrarca and Humphreys. Melbourne are going to invite a shootout. Could we end up with a game where it's 150-135? Oh. Suns probably win it. But I just settle in, Clinchy. I reckon you're going to be calling a lot of goals today.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. You're sitting in Ben Cameron's chair, so, I mean, you are doing television, but you could sit in the front row if you want to.
Yeah, just call this one. Benny's just rocked up. I'm looking very happy here.
He's just had a double take.
Binoculars out and start. I think we're going to be calling a lot of goals.
So Colton Tholstrup has been one of Benny's favourites. Who's he going to go to this afternoon? Matt Rowell makes his return after a finger injury. The Brownlow medalist, Noah Anderson's been in red hot form. Sadly, Christian Petrarca's not there for us who love the narrative around players playing against their former side for the first time. Who does Tholstrup go to?
Noah Anderson. Mm. Rowell is, of course, he's just a reigning Brownlow medalist. He's an A-grade midfielder, but the quality of their midfield and the way that they play and how dynamic they are still centres around Noah Anderson for me. It certainly helps when Petrarca and Humphreys are playing in the forward line but can just chip in up on ball for 2 or 3 minutes, that power they have through the middle. But the central person, the one it revolves around who's outside as well as inside, is Noah Anderson. So I reckon it's a job that if they could lock him away and maybe you live with Rowell having 25 hard-won possessions, but it's not too impactful. And maybe then Melbourne can get it somewhere near where they need it to look. I don't think they can go with Gold Coast, by the way. Don't get me wrong when I'm saying it's a shootout and it might be close-ish. I think ultimately the Suns charge away with it. But at least Melbourne might be able to wrestle it somewhere near what they like if Anderson can't have a good day.
Are you going to go interview Ben King for TV? What's his over-under today in terms of goals?
I think on a day like this, and I am serious about it, I think the way the game will be played, quite open and attacking, I think King would be eyeing off a 4-plus game. So he's already kicked...
I'm thinking more than that.
16-3. You reckon he'll get...
And an equal career best 7 against the Tigers. I think anything over 5 is sort of what we're expecting.
Yeah, okay. I would have thought if he could kick 5, that's a good day. I don't think it ends up a 7, 8, or 9, but I'm happy to be proven wrong. Because if we're getting knocking on the door of a double figure, I always get a little bit excited.
And if you see Cozzy Pickett downstairs, you just say to him, you do whatever you see fit, son. Yep.
Isn't he a joy to watch?
Star on the stage.
I started off this show talking about how much I love watching Isaac Heaney play the game. Cozzy Pickett's another one. And last week, Carlton fans who are still listening, mind you, they might have switched off given how much negative chat we've had about them. Cozzy Pickett just looked like he was going to... It felt like if they kept that game going, Cozzy Pickett was single-handedly going to have the Demons winning by 10 goals. Yep. He was just warming up.
Like Isaac Heaney, he can do it all. What's the margin Bombers fans would be happy with tonight if they go down to the Bulldogs?
Happy with?
Yeah.
40?
Yep.
Realistically, 70?
Yeah.
Ugly if it's 90.
Anything over 100 is panic stations. Anything under 60 is probably acceptable. And the Cats and the Hawks tomorrow from the MCG.
Oh, yes. That'll be a beauty. They're two good teams. Evenly matched midfield. I'm not coming. I'm going to watch it from home in the lounge room so I can throw a few cushions around the room. But I think the cat's jacked.
I was going to say, is there anything about Hawthorn in your life? That's a topic for another day. Thank you, Lingy.
Thank you, Clinchy. Enjoy your day. Enjoy the shootout you're about to witness.
Of course, no program next Sunday with Gather Round, but as always, you can catch up as a podcast on the best of ABC Sport. Mitch Turner with the Footy Forum, a chance for you to get involved on the talk back line, and we'll chat to you from the MCG from 2:30.